Welcome to GhostBuzz here on the Business Reports on Nova 103.5. I'm Gary Struble. Every week I get to chat to the finance ghost, find out what's going on. There's a lot going on at the moment. So, Ghost, let's perhaps start out with just an overall view on there's a lot coming out of America, a lot of noise the last couple of weeks, tariffs, which seem to be endlessly changing, and a strategy around specifically sub-Saharan Africa that seems decidedly hostile. Perhaps just give us a sense of what the last couple of weeks have meant for the African and more specifically the South African markets, just in terms of what's happening on the equities markets.
Hi, Gary, and to all the listeners, hitting me with a nice broad one there to kick things off. Look, there's obviously a quick way to answer that question, and there's a very, very long way because this is a complex area of finance. So instead, what I'll do is maybe just put a term on the table that I think it's worth remembering as listeners, which is risk off. So South Africa is a risk market. Africa is certainly a risk market. Investors see us as a place where you go in search of higher yields on our government bonds, or where you go and buy stocks that have got decent growth prospects, and you go and do it because you think there's a better chance of a return here than you're going to get in places like Europe, for example. Now, in a risk-on environment, there are more investors willing to take that risk on places like Africa. And in a risk-off environment, there are fewer investors willing to take that risk because they are sitting there and saying, everything's very uncertain right now. Let me go hide in a safe haven asset. That's another term you'll hear a lot. And that's why something like gold at the moment is just at record highs and absolutely flying. And a lot of other stuff has been struggling. So for the South African market, it's very much been a tale of which sector you're in this year. You know, people are quoting how well, for example, the top 40 has potentially done relative to some of the other indices in the world. But at the end of the day, if you dig into the sources of that return, our gold sector is really doing the heavy lifting right now, as well as stuff that's exposed to China, at least certainly the last time I looked. So yeah, very important to remember that what you're seeing on equity markets, not necessarily reflective of what's going on the ground. And in a risk-off environment, you see our gold stocks doing well, and you see a lot of other stuff actually having a pretty tough time.
Okay, let's turn on to one of those local equities then, and a company that is exposed to the international markets quite heavily so, and that is Sasol. The big story around Sasol is 2023, the share price sitting at over 400 bucks a share, 420 rand. It's trading at 66 at the moment. And a lot of people have seen a lot of strategies go awry in looking at that Sasol share. What is currently going on at the moment? They would be affected by US tariffs, but there's also a lot of local problems sitting in the Sasol environment. Give us more.
Indeed. Poor old Sasol. We might have to start calling it Sasshole, actually, because I think that a lot of investors have gotten themselves into quite a hole with this one. And yeah, I mean, as you referenced there quite correctly, this is a stock that got to, I think it was around 420 bucks a share in early 2023. Now it's trading in the 60s. And it was, of course, a stock that also made people a lot of money in the pandemic if they remembered to sell on time. I did quite well out of Sasol. I must say I was nowhere near brave enough to hold it all the way up to 420 bucks. I got out way lower than that. So I definitely didn't lock in the full move, but I've therefore also not been hurt by the huge sell-off thereafter. And there are a lot of reasons why Sasol has been struggling, but a big one comes down to just the broader South African infrastructure around Sasol has definitely not helped matters. They've had issues like coal quality as well. You know, it's just a bit of a dinosaur of a business. It has a history of making some pretty questionable capital allocation decisions that they've had to then try and live with and trade out of as best they can. For example, the chemicals business in the US. And it just always feels like things are a little bit too hard at Sasol. It really does have that feeling. You know, you go and you read their production updates, you go and read their market outlooks, etc., and you go and see stuff like very little in the way of increases in production or, you know, prices that pull decreasing production into a slightly green number year on year. But none of it tells a great story of growth, unfortunately. And obviously now with all these recession concerns and everything else, Sasol is an energy business. And what they need is they need a global economy that is growing and driving demand for energy, and specifically the type of energy that Sasol produces. So as we now sit in a world that seems to be doing the exact opposite to that, it really doesn't feel to me like things are going to get better at Sasol. And I think a lot of the disappointment that people have experienced may well continue. Personally, I have no position in Sasol. I just find it a bit too difficult to really understand the underlying drivers. You know, when Sasol plummeted as like it did in COVID, for me, it was just an obvious purchase. But right now, you know, it's not. And it's just something that I'm staying away from in this environment entirely.
So we've already referenced the US tariff mess at the moment. And mess is perhaps the right word when we look at Aspen. Aspen is also looking at these tariffs and going, there's quite a lot of bad news in the pipeline for shareholders of that stock. Tell us more.
Sure, Aspen is a bad story. This is really an example of just what happens when blue chips go wrong, and then they go wrong in a very, very big way. So Aspen, it's actually been quite a volatile share price over the sort of pandemic and subsequent period. They've been putting a lot of steps in place to build out a manufacturing business where what they effectively do is they partner with pharmaceuticals businesses who hold the IP and the rights to produce the stuff and market it. And they basically say to Aspen, right, you know, you've got the facility. We would like you to go in and produce this particular drug for us and then potentially distribute it into a region like Africa. Now, it's an interesting business in that if they can obviously get their capacity utilization up, then it can become quite lucrative. But it's also a very risky business because you've really got to ask yourself some questions around Aspen's moat. You know, if they are just the manufacturing for a particular drug, like the real moat lies in the drug itself and the ownership of that IP after years and years of research and development expenditure. You know, the pharmaceutical industry is a fascinating beast, actually. And where Aspen plays means that they are basically just the downstream of that. You know, they need to go and convince these IP owners to say, sure, Aspen, you can go and be the manufacturer of this. Now, if an IP owner pulls out, or if something goes wrong, or if there's a contractual dispute or whatever there is, then suddenly Aspen can sit with a whole lot of excess capacity that isn't currently being used. Now you add in all of the tariff issues and the risks of, for example, if the US says, well, there's a tariff on this particular country or on this particular product, and now that product is being sold in the US but manufactured by someone like Aspen somewhere else, suddenly the economics of manufacturing the drug at Aspen's facility are nowhere near as appealing anymore because of the tariffs. And the truth of it is that there's a lot of manufacturing that is very hard to move to the US, but I'm not sure that pharmaceutical manufacturing would really be on that list, because the biggest cost in pharmaceuticals was actually the R&D to create the stuff. Once that's all built and ready to go, I would think there's a lot of automation in that process. You know, this is not like a very labor-intensive textile factory that's busy producing this stuff. So Aspen finds itself very much on the wrong side of the tariff situation at the moment. And there's also a contractual dispute, a very specific one, where they said it could impact their EBITDA by 2 billion rand, which is a gigantic number, drives some pretty big impairments as well. And yeah, I mean, the share price, this announcement, by the way, came out on Tuesday, basically at market close. So, you know, everyone could digest it overnight. There was a webcast in the morning and that share price opened like over 30% lower. So this is actually a perfect example of why my money, personally, I do not run a highly concentrated portfolio. You can do all the research you want, et cetera, and the world will still dish out the ability for a stock to lose a third of its value in a single day. If that stock is 2% of your portfolio, it stings, but it's not the end of the world. But if that stock is 20% of your portfolio, it's a disaster.
Okay, then lastly, guys, let's take a look at a bank that also trades in Namibia. And that is Standard Bank. And usually Standard Bank submits quarterly financial information, whereas most companies tend to do twice a year. Tell us why that is, and then also give us an update on how Standard Bank is doing. It looks pretty strong for the African business.
Yep, Standard Bank doing pretty well at the moment. And as you say, they give us quarterly updates because they need to report to the ICBC in China, who has, I think it's the single largest stake in Standard Bank. I think it's roughly around 20%. And Standard Bank's doing well. I mean, their headline earnings up around 10% year on year. They reference that the Africa regions are still contributing over 40% to headline earnings. I find Standard Bank quite interesting in this environment, actually, because, you know, the US is kind of running this almost isolationist policy, basically the opposite of global free trade. And in doing so, they are alienating a lot of other countries. And obviously, China has spent a long time getting cozy with African governments, doing stuff like putting infrastructure in place in exchange for commodities. You know, this stuff is all well known. And in a world where the US is potentially creating more enemies than friends right now, you know, the likes of China will just stand there with wide open arms, ready to welcome anyone willing to work with them, basically. So Standard Bank's positioning as basically this Afro-Chinese play is actually really genuinely interesting. And they have actually maintained their earnings guidance for 2025 at a time when most certainly US companies are either pulling guidance entirely or giving guidance that is quite a lot lower than it was before. So something like Standard Bank, I think, might be one to watch. I think it's a little bit brave of them to just basically go out quite boldly and say, well, our guidance is unchanged. I was quite surprised by just how bullish that is. We'll see what happens there. I maintain that where we are here on the tip of Africa, we are actually not badly positioned for what is currently going on in the world.
Okay, guys, thank you very much. As always, appreciate your insights. Remember, if you want to stay up to date, you can get along to ghostmail.co.za and go check out a number of different newsletters that you can subscribe to so that you can also be up to date around the water cooler at the office. We'll be back next week with more Ghost Biz here on the Business Report.